was a couple who was thinking about getting a new car, a new vehicle. And they had been talking back and forth about it. They knew their old car was old. They knew they needed to get a new car. But they couldn't agree on what they wanted to get. The guy wanted a pickup truck. He was a pickup man, and so that's what he wanted. And that's what he had his heart set on. Well, the woman, the wife, just, no, she wanted a sports car. She's always dreamed of having a sports car, and that's what she wanted. And they kind of bickered back and forth about it, and she'd finally had enough. And she said, look here, buddy. I'm going to have a sports car one way or the other, and there better be a car that goes from 0 to 160 in less than 4 seconds in my driveway on my birthday next week. Well, the week after that was pretty quiet, and her birthday was at the end of the week, and they didn't talk hardly any up to that point. Well, her birthday came, and she heard it. She ran to the window to look out in the driveway to see if she had her sports car, and it wasn't sitting out there, and she was very disappointed, upset about that. She goes in the bathroom to get ready for the day, put on her makeup, and she sees a present wrapped there on the floor, and it was beautifully wrapped. It had a big old bow on top, had a birthday card on top of that. Well, she moved the card, and she opened up the package, and there was a couple of things in there. There was a present, and there was also a note. And the present was bathroom scales, and the note said, step on this, and it'll go from 0 to 160 in less than 4 seconds. Funeral arrangements are still pending. I saw that this past week on the internet and just thought I had to share that. Some men are not too bright, are they? What we're going to be looking at today is 1 Kings 19, 1 through 18. It's an account that is very familiar to probably everybody here. We're going to look at Elijah today and how Elijah dealt with the problem of depression. Professional psychiatrists, two of them, by one Frank Manarith, unusual last name, and then Paul Meyer, did a series of studies and had some statistics and things that they did, and here are some of the results of this. This was a number of years ago. And the result of that, they came up with the overwhelming majority of Americans suffer from depression at some point in their life. And most of them are not diagnosed with that, and most of them never even seek help. 20% of U.S. teenagers face depression in our country. Just think about that and how big of a problem that is. That is almost a quarter of our teenagers that face this in their life. 29.6 billion Americans, almost 10% of the population, will suffer from depression at some point in their life. And well, that was last year, actually. And so we can see it's very obvious, and there's a lot more that I could talk about concerning their studies, but I think that you get the point that it is a problem, not only in our country, but of course we want to be aware with what's going on in the United States. And it is a very difficult thing to deal with. And so the question really is, okay, we know that there is a problem of depression, and many of us have dealt with it ourselves, and some have had close family members and friends that have dealt with this. And the question is, how do we deal with it? How do we cope with this? Is there a solution to this problem? Well, most doctors, most psychologists will tell you that there's a little magic pill. And have you believed that there is a pill that you can take that if you get the right pill and you get the right dosage of that right pill, then that will alter that chemical imbalance and all your worries and everything will be okay. Now, they're not all like that. And I'm not saying that medicine does not help. And certainly in some cases it helps tremendously, but that's not a cure-all. There are a number of different things that have to be done. Every day, and I was just floored by the number here, every day 50,000 people check into clinics in the USA looking for help from depression. And so we can see by that it is a very, very big problem. And it is a problem that, of course, God knows and is aware of. And I believe that this account right here deals with this problem. And so we're going to look at this account of Elijah and see what we can benefit from it. Elijah showed all the classic signs of depression. If you look at this context here that Luke read earlier, he was a fearful man, and this is very much out of character for Elijah. Elijah was a man that was fearless in a sense. He was a very brave man. Right before this happened, he was a man that stood in front of 450 prophets of Baal, a false god, and mocked them, made fun of them, I guess, in a way for their beliefs, and they're cutting on themselves and calling for Baal to show himself, and he's mocking them. And then because of his great faith in God, God demonstrates his power, showing that he is the only God through Elijah. And then after that, Elijah, after all was said and done, Elijah had all 450 prophets put to death. But here in this text, we see Elijah running for his life and going to a secluded, isolated place and being a very fearful person. And there's a reason for that. We know that a lot of people that deal with depression in their life have these feelings of fear and anxiety, and sometimes can't really even pinpoint what they're fearful of, and so oftentimes will seek places of isolation to get away from everybody. Something else that he experiences, he had suicidal tendencies. He asked God that he just basically could not take anymore, and he asked God to take his life. And we know that people that are dealing with a depression and do not get help, and maybe in the more severe cases of this, will oftentimes contemplate and think about suicide. He had excessive tiredness. He goes and finds a broom tree, and he falls asleep under that tree for some time. An angel comes and gives him some food, and he allows him to eat, and as soon as he eats, he goes back to sleep, and he sleeps for some time. The angel comes back to him and gives him food again, and then it goes on from there. But he sleeps for a long period of time, and we don't know how long. The scriptures don't say. Some scholars think that he slept possibly a couple of days. We know that people that are dealing with depression a lot of times are fatigued and tired most of the time. He had feelings of rejection. He comes to God and he says, God, and we'll look at that here in just a moment, says, God, I'm the only one. Everybody else, all of your people have forsaken you. They've tore down your altars. They've done this and that. And I'm it. I'm the only one. And we know that people that deal with severe cases, especially of depression, oftentimes feel like they are the only one. No one else can possibly understand what I'm dealing with and what I'm facing and going through right now. And oftentimes they feel very isolated in their problems. And so some scholars seem to think that he went through this maybe two or three different months going through this period of depression. We really don't know. I'll tell you what is amazing about this. Elijah has just been, in a sense, at a peak in his life. And, you know, we talk about peaks and valleys, and he has been at a peak in his life in a sense that he has just preached the greatest sermon that he has ever preached. He has just dealt with 450 prophets of Baal and did so in such a brave way and put great faith in God and dealt with that. And as I said, God showed his power through Elijah. After that, Elijah prayed to God for it to rain after 3.5 years of drought, and God answered his prayer and allowed it to rain. And so here Elijah is, in a sense, in his career or in his life on certainly a peak. And then all of a sudden, he's at the very, very bottom. How in the world do you go from having being on such a high and everything going right and being so strong and fearless to being down, depressed, in despair, gloom and doom? You know, there's different things that, different names that they have for it. Some people say bipolar is what is popular to call it today, and it is a real condition. And I don't know if Elijah had it or not, but it kind of looks like that. But one thing that we need to realize is that people, God-fearing people, Christians, and great servants of God sometimes have this problem in their life. It doesn't mean, it's not a sign of a lack of faith. It doesn't mean that they are, it's not a sign of an unrighteous life or anything of that. We see Elijah, and he's a man of great faith. We see Elijah, and he is a very righteous and godly man, but yet he is dealing with this problem. There was a preacher that was I thought the world of when I was growing up. His daughter was a good friend of mine, and she was her and I were the same age. We went to school together. And her dad was a minister, and I just thought, man, I tell you, he got up and preached, and he was like nobody I had ever heard. He was such a dynamic speaker, such a good guy, and I just thought the world of him. Well, little did I know as a kid that he was dealing with problems of depression. And I don't know if they'd gotten all that bad yet, but in latter years, he dealt more and more with that problem of depression in his life. And because of that, and I'm not saying all of his troubles and all of his worries and problems came from depression, but I believe that was the core of it. But on down the line, he lost his job as a minister. He lost his family and was divorced and died a young man in his 50s because of the different medicines and things that he was on that never really got regulated just right. And so he dealt with this. But he was such a servant of the Lord. It does not mean when someone deals with depression in their life that they have a lack of faith. And we need to be careful of that. It is a real condition. One thing to note from this text here that is very, very important to keep in mind when we read this is that God never, never forsook Elijah. God never left him. God did not take his situation lightly, but he deals with it. Long, long time before psychologists and counselors and all of that, long time before there was little pills to help us with these problems, and by no means whatsoever am I belittling or making fun of that. I think a lot of that field of psychology and of counseling, and I'm not belittling that, but I'm saying a long time before that, God dealt with a man that had depression. And I want us this morning to look at the four-step approach that God used in dealing with Elijah. First of all, God helps him deal with his problem. God recognizes, he doesn't make fun of him or anything, but he is there for him and helps him deal with this problem. You know, a lot of people that deal with depression have, as I said before, this feeling of anxiety, of isolation that no one else understands, and oftentimes even a child of God when dealing with this problem believes that God is not there. Where is God in my troubles? I tell you what, one of the worst things that has ever come out in religion with Christianity is deism. The idea that God created the universe and us and he stepped back, he wound it up, as they say, like a clock, and steps back and has absolutely nothing to do with it. And that could not be further from the truth. The Lord loves us and he does not abandon us. There are so many passages that we could look at and we don't have time. Hebrews 13 verse 5 says, I will never leave you or forsake you. It's a promise that he makes to us. In Matthew 28 and verse 20 he says that, lo, I'm with you always, even to the end of the age or the end of the world. He promises us that he will always provide a way to deal with the problems and temptations in our life. 1 Corinthians 10 and verse 13. And so there's so many passages that we could look at that tell us that God helps us to deal with the problems in our life. Here's a couple of ways that God helps him deal with these problems. He helps him in an emotional way. He doesn't treat him like he's a fake. He doesn't say, Elijah, pull it together. Get yourself together. Come on, this is a lack of faith. This is a sinful attitude. He doesn't approach Elijah like that at all. And we need to be careful not to think that of those that deal with that problem. We never need to think that this is a sinful attitude or that it is a fake problem, because even God realizes that it is a problem. He helps him out emotionally, but he also helps him out physically. And to look at how he deals with this is so much different than what we see how people deal with those dealing with depression today. He doesn't have a counseling session with Elijah. He doesn't sit down with Elijah and have a face-to-face with him. But what he does is he allows Elijah to rest. He allows Elijah to get some sleep, and then he comes and sends an angel to give him food. And then he allows him to sleep some more, and then he goes and gives him more food to have more strength so that he can carry on. And then he took him 40 days and 40 nights into the wilderness. And notice, in the entire time, over a month, God does not speak to Elijah. but he's there. He's giving him a chance to rest and to get strength. And so God helps him deal with the problem in his way. Secondly, we see that God has Elijah renew his relationship with him. Look at verse 8. 1 Kings 19, verse 8. Says that he arose and ate and drank and went in the strength of that food 40 days and 40 nights to Horeb, the mountain of God. Now, the angel, either God himself or through the angel, had told him to go to Horeb. Horeb is as it says here, is the mountain of God. This is Mount Sinai. Mount Sinai is the highest point of this mountain region. And that's very important because Mount Sinai is significant when it comes to God and his people. That is exactly where God made the covenant with Abraham and his people. And this is the same place that God instructs him to go. He instructs him to go there to get rest, to get strength. He wants to listen to his problems, and we'll talk about that in a moment. But he also wants to commission him there and tell him what to do. You know, the best place when we deal with depression and hard times in our life is in the Lord's church. It is so easy when we have problems in our life and dealing with depression to want to isolate ourselves, to have the idea that nobody understands this, and so we don't, and maybe even embarrassment, and so we don't want to come and be around everybody. The best place that we can be when we're dealing with problems of any kind is right here in the Lord's church. Because God cares for you and so does your brethren. And they want to help. And that's exactly what we should be doing. There's so many different places in the Bible that talks about. The New Testament is absolutely full of scriptures that have to do with the idea of we're family. We're spiritual family, and so we are to help one another out. Project Rescue. A couple of months, several months ago, we had Charles Baggett and another brother from Beltline come and talk to us on a Sunday evening about Project Rescue. And that is a wonderful, wonderful thing because they're doing just that. They're trying to help brethren out that have problems. And what that is they're helping brethren out that have addictions to alcohol, to drugs, that are dealing with depression. They're helping them out in a physical way, in an emotional way, and also in a spiritual way. And that's something that we need to get behind and support. That's something that we need to do. Galatians 6, verse 2 says to bear one another's burdens and so fulfill the law of Christ. And that's exactly what we need to do, brethren. We need to be there for one another to help each other out in times that of sorrow. In 1999, a study was conducted at Duke University about depression with 4,000 older adults. And I want to read the conclusion of that. Very significant. Listen to the conclusion of that study. Attendance at a house of worship is related to lower rates of depression and anxiety. Imagine that. In other words, people that go and worship God regularly in their attendance and worship God with other Christians can deal with their problems easier and deal with even their depression easier than someone who doesn't. Andrew Newberg is the director of clinical medicine at the University of Pittsburgh, and he made this interesting discovery a few years ago. And trying to cut through some of all the big words, basically, but he says this: when people are engaged in spiritual pursuits, they lose the concern over self. Prayer and meditation lower the risk of depression and heart disease, and improve immune functions. You know, don't you think God knew that all along? Hebrews 10:25 says, not forsaking the assembly of ourselves together as the manner of some, but exhort one another. You know, God knew that all along. The church is more than just a body of believers and that are saved, but we are a support group, and we are a family, and that's how we need to treat one another. And so God helps Elijah renew his relationship. But thirdly, God has Elijah tell him his problems. Look at verse 13 and 14. When Elijah heard it, heard what, you know, we'd have to back up to see, and just basically there was this great violent wind that came, and it was breaking rocks off the mountain where he was. After that was a great earthquake. After that was a fire. And then after that there was a gentle breeze. And then verse 13 he says, when Elijah heard it, he wrapped his face in his mantle and went out and stood in the entrance of the cave. And behold, a voice came to him and said, what are you doing here, Elijah? And he said, I have been very zealous for the Lord, the God of hosts, for the sons of Israel have forsaken your covenant, tore down your altars, and killed your prophets with a sword, and I alone am left, and they seek my life to take it away. He asked him why he's there. Does God not know why Elijah is there? Is God not all-knowing? Yes. In fact, God is the one that sent him there. And so it's not that God doesn't know why he's there. God wants him to vocalize. He wants him to tell him his problem. And we thought that psychiatrists got that maybe from a book or something. No, there's so many things that psychiatrists get from the Word of God. Some of them, they don't even realize it. Long time ago, psychiatrists and counselors saw the value in getting a patient and getting someone to open up and talk about their problems. And it's usually it's not until then that they can start helping them out with their problems. And so that's exactly what he's doing here. Brethren, we need to talk to people about our problems. Oftentimes we're very embarrassed about something that's going on and we won't open up to somebody. We need to talk to someone. And it might be a professional, and there's absolutely nothing to be ashamed of. And let me suggest this. If you go to a counselor or psychiatrist, make sure it's a Christian one. Make sure it's a Christian one. But there's nothing wrong with that. But I'm talking about not even necessarily going to a counselor. We need to talk to people. And we need to pick someone to talk to about our problems. But it needs to be the right person. How many times have we known about people that have had maybe problems in their marriage or something, and they go to work to talk to someone and they say, hey, you need to be happy, and so maybe you need to get out of that relationship. And they end up getting some very bad advice and making the situation even worse. We need to talk to someone, but we need to make sure that it's the right person. And something else that we need to do that is so hard to do in a fast-paced world is listen. We need to be willing to listen, especially to our own brethren. My Mamaw Little was the absolute best at this. Throughout my childhood, throughout my teenage years, and all the different things that happened there, and I'm not even going there, and even throughout my adult years, my Mamaw was always there. And you know what? She didn't always have the answer, and most times she didn't even have advice to give me. She listened to me. And you know I can talk. And I'd talk her ear off. I'd talk to her 2 and 3 hours at a time sometimes, and she'd sit there and listen to me, and that helped more than anything else. We've got to take time to listen to our brethren, because a lot of them are dealing with situations, and if we're too busy, then we're basically saying we don't have time for them. Got to make time to listen to our brethren. Another thing, fourth and last, God put them to work. Look at verse 15 through 18. After allowing him to rest, after allowing him to eat, to talk about his problems, look what he does starting with verse 15. The Lord said to him, go return your way to the wilderness of Damascus. And when you have arrived, you shall anoint Hazael king over Aram. And Jehu the son of Nibshah you shall anoint king over Israel. And on, this was already read. He keeps on telling them things to do. And then down to verse 18, he says, yet I will leave 7,000 in Israel, all the knees that have not bowed to Baal, and every mouth that has not kissed him. You know, sometimes we get preconceived ideas, false notions. Sometimes we get something in our head and we think that is the case, and we won't listen to anybody. We kind of become hard-headed. And that's kind of what Elijah had done here. Elijah had got in his head that I am it. I am the only one, and they're seeking my life. Nobody else cares anything about you, God. And God had to set them straight. Listen, you need to know the truth. He said, I've got 7,000 that are just like you, Elijah. Sometimes we get something in our head, and it doesn't mean that it's right. And we need to be open to listen to other people and their opinion. And then what does he do here? You know, you ever heard the idle hands or the devil's workshop? You know, if we don't watch it, when we get down and out and we get in a state of depression, we are tired, and so we might sleep more, and we begin to get lazy if we don't watch it, and we begin to fall into self-pity, and that happens so often with those that deal with depression. Oh, woe is me. I'm not saying it's not a serious problem, but we need to be careful of that. What does he do? After he allows them to rest, he allows them to talk, he gives them food for strength, then what does he do to them? Puts them to work, doesn't he? He puts them to work. I'm going to give you some responsibility. When Allied troops were going through Europe, going through bombed out Germany back after World War II, and they came across a cathedral, and the cathedral had been completely bombed and destroyed, except the basement was pretty much still intact, and they came across this plaque. And this is a true story. And they came across this plaque, and listen to what the plaque says. It says, "I believe in the sun even when it's not shining. I believe in love even when it's not shown. And I believe in God even when he does not speak." So true. Elijah, even when God was not speaking to him at the time, knew that God was there. Listen to this. Famous psychiatrist, Dr. Menninger, and this is a guy who is a doctor and is known for what he does, was dealing with issues of depression, had someone ask him, "When you have a nervous breakdown coming, what do you do?" And listen to what he says here. He said, "Lock up your house, go across the railroad tracks and find someone in need and help that person. Because if you overcome discouragement, you do it by not focusing on yourself, but by getting involved in the lives of others." And that's exactly what God does with Elijah. Okay, Elijah, you've had all of this medicine in a sense. Now you need to go and get involved. And that's exactly what we need to do. We need to get back involved in doing things. Many people know, I guess probably everybody knows who J.C. Penney is. In the early 1920s, J.C. Penney had a number of investments. In fact, he became the leader in as far as corporate CEOs were concerned in this country. He had more than 500 stores that bore his name in the early 1920s. And in order to do that, he really had to gamble some and stretch himself, especially financially. By 1929, the Great Depression hit hard, and he did not have enough to cover all of his investments. And at that time, J.C. Penney fell into a Great Depression himself. In fact, his diet went down to pretty much just crackers and milk, and it talks about how much weight he lost, and he knew that he had a problem. He checked himself into Kellogg's Clinic, which was a sanitarium. It's kind of the same thing as the Mayo Clinic today in Battlefront, Michigan. And so he checked himself in, and there was all kinds of doctors and psychiatrists that were dealing with him, trying to help him out, and nobody was able to get to him and help him. And so after some time, he got worse and worse and worse, and he finally, by the time he was about mid-50s, had come to the conclusion that he was not going to be able to make it through this. I can't deal with the problems in my life. And so he was about ready to end his life. He had found two pieces of paper, got a pen, and wrote one note to his son and the other to his wife, explaining why he wasn't going to be alive the next day. And as he was writing these notes right before he was going to take his life, he heard some singing there in the clinic just right down the hall, and it was gospel singing. And so he went to check that out, and what it was a chapel there, and they were having a devotional or worship service, and he came to the conclusion that, you know, God has the solution to every single problem in this world. I know that he can help me with my problems. And he went back to his room. In that state of mind, he went back to his room, and he went to sleep. At the age of 97 years old, he's writing his autobiography, and he is talking about this experience, about when the Lord saved his life. We think so many things happen by coincidence. You think that singing took place by coincidence? Probably not. All of us, at some point in our lives, are going to deal with depression and anxiety, some of us more than others. Sometimes medication is necessary. Sometimes talking to a counselor is necessary, and there's nothing wrong with that. Two things that will help every single one of us out when we deal with these problems. One is we need to focus on others. Just like the doctor, the psychologist said himself, he said, when you focus on others, it helps you out. And then secondly, we need to focus on God. and not ever think that God cannot deal with any problem because he's able to deal with all problems. He says, 1 Peter 5, 6 and 7, humble yourself under the mighty hand of God that he may be exalted in due time, casting all your care on him, for he cares for you. One of my favorite passages and most comforting passages in the New Testament from our Lord. He says, come unto me, all you who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn of me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. If you are a child of God and a faithful child of God, you've had hard times, I know, but you know that statement is very true. If you're not a child of God, we want to encourage you to put the Lord on in baptism. You will not have a greater friend, and there is no other Savior than Jesus Christ. We want to give you that opportunity this morning. If you've fallen away, if you let sin come back into your life, if you've tried to deal with things yourself, realize that God has all the answers. We just need to trust and put our faith in him. Won't you come if you have a need while we stand and sing?